Hey, hey, hey. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you are in the world. This is Ross Owen on Black Sky Radio. We've got a Band of Brothers interview today with someone who hasn't been on the show yet. Craig Heaney, who played Roy Cobb, will be joining me very shortly on the show. Before that, we're going to speak to Chris Langlois, the grandson of medic Doc Rowe. He'll be joining us on the show to tell us about a brand new project he's got coming up. So stay tuned, Chris Langlois on the show in the next 5 minutes.
Hi, I'm Paul Woodatch, D-Day historian, a battlefield tour guide in Normandy, France. I offer tours of the D-Day landing beaches of 1944, along with my partner Magali. If you would like to find out more, see my website at www.ddayhistorian.com and my partner Magali's at www.ddayforyou.com.
Black Sky Radio.
Remember the summer of 99. So many things that I never said to you. If I had a way to turn back time, but I never said that you had to be untrue. Where will we go? What will we do? Just me and you. Where will we drive? Taking a ride. Just you and I. 'Cause everything about you makes me lose my mind. Where will we go? Where will we hide? Yeah. Oh, 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 oh. I saved a little money and I'm getting on a bus. Yeah. I won't tell no one, just the two of us. I'm so sorry you couldn't come along. So I'll stare out the window to write this song. Where will we go? What will we do? Just me and you. Where will we drive? Taking a ride. Just you and I. 'Cause everything about you makes me lose my mind. Where will we go? Where will we hide? We're changing, who's sorry now? Waiting for time somehow. I know we'll find the road. Stepping off the bus, I had a feeling that things were about to go my way. To the vinyl ceiling, but I don't care much anyway. Where will we go? What will we do? Just me and you. Where will we drive? Taking a ride. Just you and I. Because everything about you makes me lose my mind. Where will we hide? Where will we go? We will never know. Where will we hide? Everything's gonna be alright. Where will we go? We will never know. Where will we hide? Where will we go? We will never know. Where will we hide?
That's Hyde from Scott Grimes, who played Malarkey in Band of Brothers. Now, talking about Band of Brothers, earlier this week I spoke to grandson of medic Doc Rowe, Chris Langwa, friend of the show and a very good friend of mine. And we spoke about his new project, which is coming up very shortly. So we're going to go straight into that right now. Here's what Chris had to say earlier this week. And stay tuned, because after I speak to Chris, I'm going to be speaking to Craig Heaney, who played Roy Cobb in Band of Brothers. That's coming up straight after this. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the project and sort of where the idea came from?
Yeah, you know, I think it's going to be, because, you know, I'm a fan. You know, being a grandson of Doc Rowe doesn't preclude me from being a fan of Band of Brothers, just like anybody else. So, you know, I think the subconscious was working. It was a Sunday night, and I couldn't go to sleep. I had to get up and go to work the next Monday, of course, and I couldn't sleep, which is unusual. And, you know, you've had those moments, those epiphanies, when an idea just pops in your head. You have no idea where it came from. So this idea pops in my head to write a book about interviews with the guys who were in Band of Brothers. And I think, you know, because I've been thinking about this lately, you know, where did this idea come from? And I think we've talked a little bit, you know, on Facebook and things. You know, a lot of people talked about being the 15th anniversary of the series and how strong it's still going. You know, it's still being played on TV. So I think that's the subconscious part, that over the last few months that's been going on. So I sat in bed and I thought about it, and I thought, you know, this is really good. You know, we haven't heard, you know, a lot lately from the actors. And so I thought about it and thought about it some more. And I thought, you know, there's two sides of this coin. It wasn't just the actors who made Band of Brothers. You know, it was all the guys and girls behind the camera also. And so I thought, what if I could get some interviews with the actors, but also get some of the crew? And so I mulled it over, and it's funny, because not till the next morning did I wake up and I thought, wait a second, Ross has already done a bunch of interviews. Why did it take me so long to remember this? You know, as you know, of course, you did it for the 10 year anniversary.
Yeah.
So
and they don't date. They don't get old.
No, it doesn't. And that's really the neat thing. It's almost timeless. The fact that when you talk about this, if you talk to these guys from the 5 year mark to the 15 year mark, the stories are the same and the feelings are the same. That's what's really special.
Absolutely. And originally, before we did the interviews on the radio with the guys, the original idea way back was to do it in text format and put it on the internet. But I think that to do it in a book is just so much better, because people can carry the book around with them. They can read it as they go.
And allows them to, you know, read when they can, and then come back to it in a much easier format than trying to carry around audio. It's great that y'all did the audio, because that's a neat to be able to listen to those guys talk. There's no substitute for hearing those guys, you know, the passion in their voice and the inflection. But short of listening to 50 actors' audios, you know, 50, 60, 70, you know, hours of audio, This is the next best thing.
Yeah. And who have you spoken to so far? I mean, obviously, I've joined forces with you on this behind the scenes to sort of help you and get going. But who you've spoken to a couple of other people, and you've got more people in mind as well. As you said, behind the scenes, more of the cadre and of course, casting people. And
you know, you had, you know, probably somewhere around 40 or 45 of the actors. And I think we've accumulated probably another four more that have not been released yet. The guy who played the chaplain has some neat stories.
Oh yeah.
The other medic, Spina, Tony Devlin.
Right.
So it'll be good to get some of those stories. And guys, some of these guys have never done any interviews whatsoever, and so we'll be bringing their stories for the first time. And the neat thing, you know, I've talked to some of the writers. Like you said, the cadre who train these guys, who have bring a unique angle, training those guys at boot camp. One of the common themes in listening to the actors talk was how important boot camp was to them, not only to as human beings, as people, to form their own little band of brothers, which they've become, but also to really teach them the technicalities of war in a very short period of time, so that as Ben Kaplan said, when they talked about how we're going to do this battle, Dale Dye could just yell at him, as he does, yell at them what they needed to do, and they just jumped to it and did it. Well, obviously, without boot camp, you know, that wouldn't happen. So hearing the cadre tell those stories of how they did what they did, why they did what they did, will be an interesting aspect for the fans to understand why it looks so good on screen. Well, you know, these guys like Billy Budd and Freddie Joe, you know, Dale Dye, those guys made it look good because of the knowledge that they brought to boot camp.
Sure. And do you have a name for the book?
You know, that's been one of the toughest parts. You know, I come back to, you know, Kurahi, as an all encompassing, you know, title. I mean, that word rings so strong. It has such power, not only with the real Men of Easy, but with the actors. So, you know, some variation thereof. You know, if somebody's got an idea, I'm certainly open to ideas. Maybe a fan out there has a book idea that we hadn't, a title that we hadn't thought about yet. So that might be something fun.
Now, can you give us a bit of a teaser? Do you have anything there that you can read and just give us an idea of how this is going to come across and take?
Yeah, you know, it's funny you ask that because this has been really fun for me to hear, because, you know, I know some of these actors and I've spent some time with them and that's fun. And but to hear them talk about some things that hit home, you know, Robin Lang talked about Frank John Hughes, and there was a time when, you know, Frank used the same rifle, the same Thompson machine gun every day. It was assigned to him, and he went to the armory one day to get his Thompson, and the armorer wouldn't give him the gun, and he was mad about something. Mm-hmm. And we'll leave it at that. You'll have to listen and read to figure it out. But it really, lack of better words, it pissed Frank John Hughes off. Mm-hmm. What he was being accused of. And it just showed the passion that these guys had. And a lot of these stories, Ben Kaplan tells a funny story that I had never heard anywhere. They're on their formation to do their last field exercise as a group. All the actors are together, do final exercise, and they're going to get their jump wings. And so Damian Lewis as Winters is obviously going to give them the big hoorah speech and give them the tactics that they're going to use for this. Well, Damien's finger causes a pretty tense moment in front of everybody. And so that's another good story that I just, it's hilarious in one sense, but it shows the human side of it. But it's a neat story that if these guys don't tell this story, and it comes back to the same thing that we talk about the vets, if these guys don't tell these stories, nobody knows them. And so that's an underlying drive for me to get these guys to talk, because Band of Brothers is not what it is accidentally. It wasn't created accidentally. The people behind it on both sides of the camera had such a passion and a dedication to honoring these guys, these veterans. And that's why 15 years later, Band of Brothers is so good. And so all these stories, I think, reinforce that fact. They all had a passion to honor the men, to do them justice, and to tell their story. And that passion is what makes Band of Brothers what it is. And so I'm excited to not only get the actor side, but get some of the guys' wardrobe. I'm talking to a lady from wardrobe. And as you know, we lost Joe Hobbs.
Yes.
So, you know, she can be a real key to talking about wardrobe, and obviously that was important. Mm-hmm. Even Kaplan talked about using the photos from Gordon in Carentan so that he put his grenades on his uniform exactly the way Gordon did. So those little details, even in wardrobe, you know, come into play with the passion. So I've talked to guys from the musical score, and we've lost Michael Kamen, who you know, put it all together, but some of the other guys that worked obviously with him, yeah, to make the musical score. I mean, if you don't get goosebumps with that first opening musical score, I mean, you're not even alive.
Oh, the music just does it for me, definitely.
Absolutely. So, you know, hearing these guys talk, you know, I've talked to some of the set design, special effects, ADR, which is the guys that do some of the dubbing. So because the actors after filming, and I've learned this, we'll come back and redo just the voice, mm-hmm, over the video. And so, again, that's going to be a fun interaction to learn about these guys, because they had some fairly intimate moments, you know, with the actors, really one-on-one.
And when you mentioned the soundtrack as well, that I remember Neil McDonough, he just breaks down every time he hears the music. He mentioned that in the interview with us. If you've just joined us, we're chatting to Chris Langwa in Dallas. Chris, of course, is the grandson of Doc Rowe, who was a medic with Easy Company. I'm sure you all know that already. Now, Chris, how long has it took you to get what you've done so far? How long have you been working on the book, and when do you anticipate it being ready?
You know, it takes hours to listen to the guys, and I'm doing it in a two-step process. I hadn't found a better way to do it, but I listen to the guys, and I write it down. And, you know, you've got to listen, and then you almost have to listen to the whole sentence and then rewind back to that sentence. And you know, I'm trying to stay as true to each word. And I want these guys, I want their words to be their words. I'm not trying to change their the words and how they say it. So I'll listen. It may take me three or four times to get a sentence down on paper. And I'm a faster typer than I am writer. So once I get it all down, you know, typing it out doesn't take too long. But some of these interviews was very long. So it takes a while, some of these guys, and you just don't, you don't want to miss anything, and you don't want to miss the inflection and in the words, because again, it's their stories. You know, you don't want to lose, you know, the passion and how they say it.
Yeah.
So I've tried to be, so it's a time consuming process, man. Release date, Ross, I'd love to say it's going to happen in 2017, you know, somewhere in between work and wife and kid. You know, I sit down with some quiet time and try to get it done. I'd love for it to come out in 2017, and that's certainly the goal. Just getting all these guys lined up and getting them down on paper is the key. So that's what we're going to shoot for 2017. And
I think that sounds good.
I'd love to be able to share it with everybody by then. I'm so excited about this project. You know, it's so time consuming, and sometimes it seems daunting. The mountain to climb once I've really gotten into this. But once I start working on it, I get so excited about the stories that are going to be told that most people haven't heard. You know, thanks to you recording all these stories 5 years ago, you know, we've got a huge springboard to bring these stories and create something that's going to be, you know, available for fans. You know, I'm working on some ways to make this available, not only in the U.S., but in the U.K. and in the E.U., so trying to make some progress into making that very easy for people to order. So bring it to as many people as we can. And I'm excited. As a fan, I'm excited. And I'm excited for other fans that we can bring these stories into their hands and let them enjoy them too.
Keep us posted. Come back on the show and let us know the latest on it and who you've got. And are you going to try and get Tom on it, Mr. Hanks and Mr. Spielberg?
Absolutely. That is the ultimate big goal that we're going to work for. So we've got some springboards coming up. The trip to Bastogne will be one of the springboards to see the actors and give them something physical in their hands that they can see that the work that we've done so far. And from there, take that to some more of the actors. And then I've got some springboards on the crew side that I'll use. And the goal is to work our way up to Hanks and Spielberg. I'll put it to you like this. If ever Hanks and Spielberg were going to talk about the making of Band of Brothers, this will be
the time to do it.
The perfect place for it. There'll be no other venue for them to immortalize their efforts than this book right here. And truly, I believe that. So we're going to work hard to make that happen. Actors are pulled in a lot of directions, and I understand that. But again, I think once they see the work that we've done, the compilation that we've created, and again, once we get some of the crew side, you know, writers and directors and set design, and you know, those guys, they'll see that it's a bigger picture, and I think it'll draw them in, because they'll realize, again, if I don't put my words down, I'm going to miss out on this opportunity to tell the story, and they could have some selfish reasons for that, but I think, you know, to a man, you know, the actors have some, they all have unselfish reasons for telling their story because they represent these heroes. So I'm confident that we'll get those guys. And it'll, again, just add to a more complete story. So we're going to try to do, I've come up with a name for this, Doc Rowe Publishing. And So we'll have a Facebook page created under Doc Rowe Publishing. So they'll be able to find that. I'm sure you could put a link up there.
Absolutely.
On your site. And then so fans can log on there. And then we'll, as this thing grows, we'll continue to add updates and the fans can, you know, I think it'd be great. I'm certainly welcome to any input that any of the fans have. If they got some ideas, you know, let's bring it on. You know, let's share in this.
Chris, I appreciate you taking up. I know you only had a 30-minute break, and I appreciate you using up that break to talk to me and tell us about what you're and everybody else and tell us what's happening with the book.
Absolutely. Man, I appreciate your time. I know you're a busy guy yourself, so I appreciate you letting me blab a little bit about this and share my excitement about this, book.
We've always got time for Chris Langma on the show. Listen, man,
I'm glad.
Yeah, go on.
I'm just glad I understood 99% of what you were saying.
Yeah, I'm trying to slow down for you. I'm getting practice. Every time we go to these reunions, people look at me as if, you know, where's this translator? So I've learned to slow down. So I'm practicing.
Good.
All right, buddy. You stay safe out there, as always, Chris.
You too, man.
Thanks, man. Cheers.
All right,
see
bro.
You later.
Cheers. You too. Later.
Cheers, man. Chris Langma on the show. Thanks for joining us, Chris. Coming up next, Craig Heaney from Band of Brothers played Roy Cobb after this song.
Remember me whenever you are blue. Remember me when there's no one holding you. Feel like you can't make it through. Remember me, and I will be with you. Remember me whenever you're afraid, and when you lose your dreams along the way. Remember me if there's someone in my place. Anytime it feels like you can't make it through. Remember me, and I will be with you.
Okay, it's been some time now since we had a Band of Brothers guest on the show, but since the cast reunion takes place this weekend in Bastogne, I thought I'd give those of you who can't make it something special. Today I'm chatting to one of the core cast members. He played Roy Cobb, and I'm absolutely delighted to welcome Craig Heaney to the show. Craig, how are you doing?
I'm all right, mate. How are you?
It's such a shame that you're not able to get over to Bastogne this year. I know you're very disappointed about that.
Yeah, I am. When I spoke to you, I was going to do my best to get over there, but I'm not allowed to fly at the moment, so I wouldn't have been able to get there because of illness, basically. So I've had a few brain problems in the past, which is why I haven't done anything so far or appeared with you or spoke to you. So, but I'm getting a lot better now, but under doctor's orders, I'm not allowed to go on an aircraft at the moment. So sadly, I won't be there.
Such a shame, but you never know. We'll try and get one in England, one of these reunions, and that way we can bring everybody to your house or something. We'll come to Teesside.
Yeah, let's do that.
Now, we always start off these interviews at the very beginning. We start off talking about the audition process. How did you get the part of Roy Cobb? Can you talk us through your audition process?
I certainly can. Do you know I never ever read for Roy Cobb in one audition, in the audition process?
A lot of the guys read for Spears.
Yeah, I did as well. Spears and Mark Warren's character, Blythe, Heffron. I think that's about it, but I never read for Cobb. There was a lot of different characters that I read for. Mostly it was for Heffron to start with, and then what they were doing was trying to get a sense of who the people were, and as actors, what we would bring to different characters, I think.
Sadly, Roy Cobb passed away in 1990, so you wouldn't have got the chance to speak to him when you're researching the role. So did you get the chance to speak to any of the veterans about Cobb? Or, I mean, how did you research it?
It was a bit of an odd situation in that, I mean, it's a long time ago now, so your memory of what happened at the time might not be absolutely correct. Mm-hmm. But I just remember with the veterans, everyone was very polite and everyone was lovely and everyone was pleased to meet every other character, almost as if they were meeting the person themselves, remembering their younger days. But there was almost a negative reaction when they knew that they were meeting Cobb. I think they just didn't know him.
Right.
I don't think there was any fondness, you know, because there was the dishonorable discharge, and Cobb was an older soldier. Cobb had spent more time in the armed forces than a lot of the recruits.
That's right.
So I don't know whether there was just a distance between. So I don't think it was anything negative. Mm-hmm. I think it was just that they didn't really have a close relationship with him.
Well, he was 9 years in the army before he was in the parachute infantry. And during that time that he was in the army, he took part in an assault landing in Africa, and he survived a torpedo attack which sunk the troop ship that he was on when he was travelling back to the States. So, because there's this image of Cobb as being a coward.
I was quite conscious that I hope I didn't portray Cobb as a coward. I don't think there's any instance in there where I was consciously thinking this man wasn't as comfortable to be there. I think to be honest, in retrospect, I think he was a bit more aware of the consequences because he'd already been there. So I think when things happen to you, it makes you a more wary but stronger person. I don't think it's necessarily, I think sometimes in the first experience, there could be a bit more bravado. I don't think there was any bravado with Colm. I think he was sort of resigned to the fact that he was there, but he didn't necessarily relish the experience that he'd already had. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that it was suggested in Ambrose's book that there was a certain amount of bitterness that he hadn't progressed as far as he should have in his career by the time. I mean, you're dealing with a private. It's difficult because the most important thing is to respect the real people. Mm-hmm. But as an actor, you're given a script. So in a way, you do have to take your own artistic license as well, mm-hmm. of why those words have been given to me. Why am I actually saying that dialogue? So it's a really difficult thing to portray, in a way to portray a real person and not actually have contact with that person beforehand.
Now, was there any point when you actually spoke to the producers and said, look, is, because I know Donnie Wahlberg would do this. He would, if he didn't agree with it, he'd spoken to Carwood Lipton and said, look, that didn't actually happen. That person wasn't there. There was times when Carwood Lipton would say, I wasn't there at that point. And Donnie would say to the producers, I can't be in this scene because Lipton wasn't actually here. Or I would say, that didn't actually happen. And he would try to, you know, he would speak to the producer, he would speak up. Were you like that, or did you just kind of say, well, look, I'll just do what I'm told?
There was an occasion where I got a phone call to say, there's a car outside your house. And this was when they were filming episode 9, which was in Switzerland. And it was an episode with some cheese in a cheese factory where what they'd done is they'd said, well, we've written Cobb into the scene. And I said, well, I've been discharged. So I wasn't in Switzerland. So that was the one time when I remember saying that this is historically incorrect. I wasn't there. So I wasn't actually in London either, so the car was waiting outside my house, and I was on a roller coaster in Blackpool. That's a true story. I actually had the phone conversation whilst on the Pepsi Max in Blackpool.
See, this is the stuff we like to hear.
There's a car outside, and Cobb is going to steal some cheese. Was the and the script rewrites in the car for you, and I said I wasn't in Switzerland and I'm on a roller coaster.
So that did you see? Didn't have to go. Wow, that's incredible. That scene in the aeroplane where the story in the aeroplane, I didn't know that it was George Luz who had swapped seats with Cobb. He asked to swap seats with Cobb.
Yeah, he'd swapped.
Because he didn't want to get hit. He said, I don't want to get hit. I don't, because if I get hit, then I can't jump. So Cobb swapped places with him, and then Cobb got hit. And there's an interesting thing I want to ask you about the last patrol. During the last patrol episode, when the German prisoner was wounded and he was screaming in the water, and Webster offered, this is the true story, Webster offered to silence him for fear that he would give away their position. And so he and another paratrooper threw grenades at the soldier, but they missed. And Cobb threw a grenade, and he succeeded in killing the German soldier. He then goes on to get drunk, which was portrayed in the series. In the series, he gets reprimanded by Colin Hanks' character, Second Lieutenant Jones, and Staff Sergeant John Martin, played by Dexter Fletcher. But in reality, it was Jack Foley who led the patrol. And Cobb almost got shot for assaulting Jack Foley. Apparently, Colonel Sink actually said to Foley, you could have saved us all a lot of trouble. You should have just shot him. Did you know that?
I knew all of it, and some of it ended up on the cutting room floor.
You actually shot it? You shot the scenes?
We shot the grenades. There was also an instance where I was going to shoot a horse whilst sat drunk. We didn't shoot the assault of Foley, but I was aware of all the instances. But there was quite a lot of things that were shot of Cobb that gave a lot more backstory. But I think at the time there was concern of he was being portrayed in too bad a light. There was things that told that story but just didn't make the actual series in the end. But that happens, you know. You film so much, and there's quite a lot of stuff that's missing. And my sadness at the time was that I thought there might have been, you know, deleted scenes and things, but there wasn't, sadly, of that backstory, which for people who've really followed it and think it to me, it does seem like there's bits missing when it comes to Cobb's story, but that's obviously out of my hands. So that was it. Yeah, we did the grenades. I did that. He actually silenced him. He silenced the guy that he says, "Did you leave someone on the bank?"
Mm-hmm.
There was actually another scene where Cobb had been drinking and was trying to get a grenade over the other side, and had several attempts before he actually succeeded.
Right. Before all this, when you first got the role and before you started shooting, you guys went to boot camp, and I want to talk to you about boot camp. Were you prepared for that, like mentally and physically?
I thought I was. But no, not really. I remember having a conversation with my family and my partner at the time and saying, I'm physically fit. This'll be fine. But it was a bit of a shock to the system, to be honest. I fondly remember we had a lot of real, military guys from the UK that were training with us as well. Because they were going to be do supporting artist work within the series.
I see.
And I learned an awful lot. I learned an awful lot out of them. You know, you sort of picked up very quickly little tricks of the trade of military life that I wasn't aware of. I could do all the physical tasks and all the training that way, but it was more getting into the mindset of basically following a set routine that is given to you rather than thinking for yourself.
Mm-hmm. How did you find the cadre? Because we've heard funny stories, you know, about the way the cadre were like, you all had to, for instance, you all had to speak in your accents from day one, basically. You had to be in character. And of course, there's Dale Dye and Farnsworth. And I mean, how did you get along with those guys? Did you ever have any run-ins with them? Did you ever get balled out, like singled out?
No, not really. The one thing I remember about accents was I was called when I'd been given my grease gun in episode 5, I was called out to go and speak with Tom Hanks, mm-hmm. with Dale Dye. I was called out separately to show him the new weapon that I had. And I came over and said, I've got a grease gun. This is my grease gun.
You called it a gun.
And Dale Dye, yeah, I said, I've got a grease gun. And first of all, no, we're allowed to call it a gun with a grease gun.
Oh, okay.
That officially was the term for it. It wasn't a weapon. So I was that was all right. I was allowed to do that.
Okay.
But I was speaking in my accent.
Oh.
And plus I'd met Tom before, and everyone there knows I'm not American. But Dale told me, speak American, son. And I remember saying, but I'm not American. Because so I'm stood with my and Tom was fine with that, because basically I'm an actor, and it's like me coming on and talking to you now in an American accent. I'm not American, so I wasn't speaking in my accent all the time at boot camp. I didn't do that.
And you didn't get chewed out?
No.
Wow. I mean, because we've heard so many different stories.
I don't know if I'm being contrary, but... Well, the thing is, I'm living up to Cobb's reputation. You know, they cast the right people to do the right parts. If Cobb wasn't American, then he wouldn't have been speaking American. So I spoke American once I was on the job on set, but until then, no, I was speaking in my accent.
Wow. Because everyone that we've spoken to was usually would get chewed out for it and would get made to do 100 press-ups or something, you know, but whenever they if they went out of accent or if they answered back to the cadre or for the slightest little thing. So many different people have told us the consequences of their actions, and that just surprises me. But then again, that's the type of attitude that Cobb would have. Maybe that's why you got away with it.
Yeah, I think I slipped through the net. I kept quiet. I'm me, and surely everyone realised that we were employed because we could do the accent and we could portray Americans. But to expect in the intense training that we were put under to expect to pretend to be someone else is quite a difficult learning experience. I learned it as me, because it was me that was learning it. So I don't know if I can't remember. I think that's why I got on so well with the British soldiers that were there, because they weren't portraying a different character, you know. I don't know whether that happened a lot in boot camp, which is great for an actor that works like that, that they're in their role all the time from the start.
Yes.
But I don't think I would have been able to learn the important things that I needed to learn personally if I'd been taking on a role and then having to learn more roles on top of it.
Sure.
So I had to do it as me.
Right. Wow, that's so nice to hear, like, something different, actually, because you're the first person to say that out of everybody that we've spoken to. But you know, at boot camp, it wasn't all serious, because we know about some of the hijinks that went on as well behind the scenes. Did you get involved in any of that? Were you a victim? Were you one of the instigators in the hijinks, or did you just stay out of it all? For instance, Jimmy Madio.
Which?
There's a story that I believe Jimmy went into the toilet. And what was it he did again? He did the toilet. That's what he did. And he left the heating on and went out. So by the time they came back in, the place was whiffing, shall we say. Little things like that. But there's a lot of different stories of different hijinks.
I remember that happening, but I wasn't involved in it, to be honest. There's a load of men shoved together. There's always going to be those sort of things happening. Mm-hmm. But not particularly, no. I sound like I was really boring there, but I think I kept my head down and tried to learn as much as I could within the time, really.
Who did you hang around with? Who did you bond with at boot camp? Who would you say were the people that you kind of hang around with?
A lot of the, as I say, the real soldiers.
Sure.
Dave Schwimmer.
Oh, really? Now, that's interesting that you said that, because I was just about to mention David Schwimmer, because Dale Dye, when he was on the show, explained that he was deliberately segregated from the, because of his character, he was kind of segregated from the rest of the cast to capture that, you know, and that worked. And a lot of people say that was a great move on Dale Dye's part to make it happen that way. So you were more...
Yeah.
So you were probably, were you more segregated from the other guys as well then? Was that maybe part of the whole process that, because Cobb's character kind of was, it was kind of like that in the series, wasn't it? It was kind of separated.
I think what happened, I think it happened organically, but I don't know how much of it was actually planned.
Right.
I think it just was, I think it was well cast. And I think naturally the guys that met on set or met during boot camp, if they'd met in real life, I think those friendships would have still formed. Dexter, I was close to.
Right.
Dexter Fletcher.
Yeah.
But most of the time it was when we could have quiet times when we could speak in our accents just one-to-one. I can't, it's difficult to explain. It's, that's one of the things that maybe was a bit detrimental for a British person to have to speak in an American accent all the time, because the American guys could be themselves with each other. But you have a British guy speaking to another British guy and pretending that they're American, you can't have just a one-to-one ordinary conversation. It's a performance.
Sure it is, of course.
So that boot camp, there was a lot of, I don't know if it was segregation. It was just, as in real life, I made closer friendships with certain people.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that would always be the case in real life.
I was just going to ask you if you remembered David, when he was on the show, I can't remember if it was David brought it up or if it was other cast members, but we did mention it to David. He had to go somewhere, he had to go off set. I think he got injured or something. He hurted himself.
The full story.
Right, come on then, give us your
version. I know the full story. He ran into a tree stump.
Oh, we didn't hear that.
And he... Yeah, I know all this.
We just know he hurted his foot or something.
I carried on messing with Dave after we were out of boot camp and meeting up in London and stuff. I could tell you lots of stories about that, but it's not about Band of Brothers. But Dave ran into a tree stump, and then there was trouble with Friends because he had to go back and film Series 6. And there was a big hassle with Friends that whether it was safe for him to carry on doing it because of insurance. And then if you watch Series 6 of Friends, he's got a limp while he's in the actual show. And that was from while he was filming Band of Brothers.
You're giving us the good stuff. We never heard this before. what did you think of his portrayal as Sobel?
I thought he was fantastic. I think it was a very strong career performance for him. I mean, but Dave's very good in everything. If you actually access what he's doing, he's just a very good actor. I've got a lot of respect for him, but I think he did a fantastic job. He's very technically proficient, Dave, and a lot of the things that I've seen him do in Friends, because I know Friends well.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the things that he does, he makes it look easy, but it's not. There's a lot of technicality going into his performance, and mm-hmm. I think that's what he did with Sobel as well, and I think with everything that he does, really. But once you've got a face that's recognisable, it's very hard to... You can't get rid of that,
well,
you know?
Of course. Especially in a show as big as Friends, it was so successful.
Yeah, yeah. But I think he's also good at bringing an element of himself into everything that he does. Mm-hmm. So, but I think he did a great job on that. And now, Simon Pegg's with him.
Oh,
and Simon
right.
Pegg went off to do all sorts, didn't he?
Well, look, we've spoke about how many big names have come out of Band of Brothers. We mentioned McAvoy and Fassbender. And there's so many people have come out of Band of Brothers, gone on to massive heights. And now, do you still keep in touch with... Is there anybody from the cast you keep in touch with? Like David, for instance, do you still keep in touch with David?
Do you know, to be honest, Ross, I've been going through so much of my own problems in the past, as you know. I'm not, at the moment, in touch with anyone. But bear in mind, I was dishonourably discharged so it probably fits. I can tell you a terrible story if you want. It's not a terrible story, but this really happened.
Okay.
And the cast don't know about this, and no one will have ever heard this before. And maybe you can use this as my highlight. Listen to this. When we're at boot camp, I really needed to go to the bathroom, to the toilet, for a number two, so to speak. And I was told that you had to go somewhere because we couldn't go back to the actual camp. So I had to go somewhere in the forest and do my business out there and then bury it. And they gave me some toilet paper and then sent me off into the woods. And I did my business, but I didn't bury it. I thought, I'm not going to bury that. And I forgot about it for about an hour. I went back and we moved location and we had to do practice doing a charge across an open field. And it was the field that I'd left my excrement in the middle of it. And then I had to proceed to watch everyone charge towards it, which I hadn't dug up. And someone ended up with a piece of toilet paper stuck to their boot.
Do you know who?
I can't remember, but I told Dexter this story. And then there was a saying for a while, does a cob shit in the woods?
Did Dexter start that? That's brilliant.
I think Dexter started quite a few things.
Oh, did
but,
he?
I think it might have been Dexter.
What was your favourite scenes or your episodes to shoot? What was your personal favourites?
I enjoyed, personally, I thought Tom Hanks's episode, Crossroads, was very good.
Mm-hmm.
It's nice to watch it back. I like to watch the episodes where I'm not in it at all, because then I feel like I'm watching a program just like anyone else, whereas you do, when you're watching an episode you're in, you do tend to look at what you were doing and whether you did a good job of it. But I did enjoy the What You're Looking At, Webster scene where I'd been drinking, because I was given a rewrite of that on the day on set. So I'd never seen it before. So it was quite fresh and I hadn't had time to think about what I was going to say.
Sure.
So I personally enjoyed doing that, just getting something and doing it instantly rather than having time to think about it. And it's always boys with toys. All the combat scenes were fantastic. Because to ride along on a tank and move out the way of a turret moving and then fire your weapon off and reload it and shoot the German and the German squibs go off and then everything. It was like being in the Cowboys and Indians as a child, some of it.
Mm-hmm.
But I enjoyed all of it. I really did. I loved going to work every day, you know. And I have fond memories of all of it.
Did you expect it to be so big and still popular today?
I hoped it would be because, I mean, it's, I was about to say a great story, but it really happened, you know, and it really reminds you how much those guys went through.
Sure.
And how they kept going and kept getting up is just phenomenal, you know. But I hope it stood the test of time. The thing that I'm not making light of, but after it had just come out, one of the first questions that I got asked an awful lot was, are they going to make another one?
I know, we've heard this. I know, and how can you make another one?
Are they going to make another one? Band of Brothers 2. This time it's personal.
Yeah.
But
we've had that come up before. I know, people don't think it, they don't think it through. But listen, final question. We asked this to all the guys just to finish off the interview. How would you sum up the men you've portrayed, the men of Easy Company? How would you sum them up?
I'd say spirit. Their spirit is unbelievable. I don't think it could ever be recreated on screen. Ever. I don't think you could ever do justice to what they went through and the courage and spirit that those men had.
I think that kind of sums it up perfectly. But listen, Craig, I know that your time is short. I'd just like to thank you so much. It's been worth the wait to get you on. I'm so delighted that we finally got you on the show. And we wish you all the very best with your health.
It's been a pleasure. It really has.
Craig Heaney joining us on the show, played Roy Cobb in Band of Brothers. Craig, thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Black Sky Radio.
Hi everybody, it's Alex. This is my new song, Horizon on My Mind, and it's about my journey about this cancer. And the single and the video will be out on December.
To go.